I'm starting off this week's podcast a little differently with a couple of messages to all of you who listen. And of course, I want to say thank you so much for listening. The audio last week for my intro and outro was not the best. And I wasn't sure how many of you had been aware of the fact that I've been producing this podcast under really extraordinary circumstances. First, I want to say thank you for listening, despite all my mistakes, all of the issues that the podcasts have had over the years, and all the things that have been a little problematic. It has been a very challenging and difficult few years for me. I have not really had a place to live for the last 3 years, and so have been producing this podcast essentially in different people's houses. I've been doing a lot of house sitting. I've been doing a lot of traveling. This summer, I lived at the Oregon coast. And so with all of those spaces, there's a different kind of tenor and a different kind of vibration, reverberation for the spaces that I'm in and the way I'm producing the podcast and how I'm interviewing people. And so I'm hoping now that I have a little more stability, that the production values are going to go up and they'll be consistent and they will be less grating on my ears, because if anyone notices these things, it's me. I just wanted to put that out there. And then I'd like to talk about what happened this last week. I know a lot of people are very dismayed and upset and angry and confused by their election results. And, you know, I put this podcast out into the world suggesting that the world is, at its heart, a beautiful place. That it's a good place, that while humans have their struggles, collectively, you know, as groups, we struggle. We are always trying to learn things every day. I mean, I hope that's the case. You know, down at our core, humans are good, and that they wouldn't wish ill on other people. Now, I realize that this is a naive thing to even think, let alone say. But this podcast is basically saying that there is this energy in the universe, that it only wants what's best for us, and that it has our backs. And I realize that is a very privileged position to come from. There have been times while creating this podcast that I've thought, okay, wait, what about what's going on in Palestine? Okay, wait, what about the wildfires in California? I mean, you cannot help but look at all the suffering and the struggles out there in the world, the things that are not okay, that are hurting other people, that are hurting our environment, and still say, oh, you know, have 100% faith. Oh, this universe has our backs. It absolutely believes in us and has our backs. It doesn't for some people. And, you know, I've really wrestled over, can I continue putting this podcast out with so many people still struggling and suffering? And I guess what I've come up with is, especially with these election results, I know that when I find podcasts like this that lift my heart, that help my heart to feel connected to others, that help my heart to understand that this world has a potential for beauty, that there are so many possibilities out there for connection, for beautiful stories, for collaboration, for bringing more people to the table. You know, I would rather create this podcast that maybe suggests all that, that evokes all that. I'd rather be someone who creates something that builds rather than destroys. And I know with what's happened this last week, a lot of people, a lot of dear friends of mine are looking out there and thinking a lot of destruction is coming. And they might not be wrong. That might be what's coming. And so I thought, I'm going to look at this podcast as a platform to remind people that there is magic in the world. There is hope out there, that we can have faith in our fellow man, and that we can be ourselves creators of beauty, bring beauty out into the world, bring hope, be someone's magical experience, be someone's miracle. And so while I looked at the election results and thought, my God, how am I going to put this podcast out that says everything's groovy? Well, yes, that's a challenge. Everything is not groovy. It's not groovy even right now. But I would like to be a place where you can come, set down your cares for a while, put on your earbuds, listen with your AirPods, whatever that looks like, and you can find some peace. And you can find a place to just rest your heart and know that the story you're going to hear is going to bring some consolation to you. At least I hope it does. So with that, please know that I'll be navigating these next few months, these next few years, with a lot of awareness that it's tough to suggest this world has our backs. I mean, I feel like we're going to be coming into a lot of dark grace, a lot of dark grace moments coming up here in these next few years. But also that we can be there for each other and we can show up for each other. And one of the things I'm going to do is show up in the form of this podcast. So with that being said, let's get to this very next episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast. Greetings, dear ones, and welcome back to another episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast. This interview is so super fun. I introduce you to maybe the world's most dynamic and hilarious human being, just someone who is so joy-filled, it's ridiculous. Gina Economopoulos, and yes, I do ask about her name because you all know how much I love where names come from. Gina is just a great human being and so self-effacing and so full of life and so full of self-awareness about the journey she's been on. She's a former nun as well as an end-of-life doula whose journey started as a bartender before embarking on a 12-year convent journey. And we do talk about that. We talk a lot about her bartending. We talk a lot about the alcoholism that consumed her for so long. We talk about her journey as a nun and then becoming an ex-nun. She has a story that reminds us that hope can be discovered even in our darkest moments. And I think you got the gist of that in the intro that I did about dark grace, that even these moments, these times in our lives where it seems that not even the tiniest sliver of light can get in, well, somehow there's light there and we just can't see it. Gina is just a wonderful human being and we hit it off. And in fact, after the conversation, we actually sent a few emails back and forth to each other because we just delight in who each other is. And I love finding people like that in this world, don't you? I mean, it's that web of humanity that's going to save all of us. So now, without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to one of the grooviest human beings I've met in a long time, Gina Economopoulos.
I go, and then as I'm going to get to the bus, I see Father Tony. So right now I am like starving for prayer, starving for grace, anything, starving for light. So I asked Father Tony to pray over me. He didn't know anything. He started what one would say, like prophesize. He prayed. He says, I ask God to give you the light in the darkness that you're experiencing. And he was like, he was saying all these things that I'm in tears. And I'm like, oh my God, he's reading my soul. As soon as he's done, I looked at him. I said, Father Tony, how did you know? He goes, I don't know, but it looks like something is pushing you out.
Place where you had to introduce yourself, how would you do that?
Today. Yes. Okay. If I was going, the way I would introduce myself, saying, hi, I'm Gina. I am a sober woman today, woman of faith. I would introduce myself I'm a very personality person, like, you know, and I have a caring heart. So the way I would come across would be more like, yes, this is me, but who are you? You know, who are you? You know, oh, you like cats, you know, to more, less focus on me and more on them. If I'm in a conversation or go to a party, I could always fill in the gaps. So.
Amazing. And I feel like we do need more people in the world that actually care about how other people are doing. You know, I certainly have had my run lately of meeting new people and, you know, I could barely get a word in edgewise with them just talking about themselves. And that's fine. I don't mind that. I love meeting new people. But I also think it is so important to be inquisitive and interested in other human beings, just in general, because that's how we create connection. And that's how we create community and belonging. And I love your answer, because we need more of you in the world. And I think I'm going to ask my second question a little early, because I have a larger question behind it. But did you grow up in a religious household? And how did that kind of shape your life later on?
I was raised Catholic, a large family, Italian and Greek, 8 children, the 7th child. So through growing up, you know, church every Sunday, catechism, received all my sacraments. So that's how religion we were. But my parents were devout. They would go to Mass every day during Lent. And then, of course, as a child, we got to go to church. I did go. But once college, I left. Not that I left my faith, but I just left the religion part of it.
And what I know, but my listeners do not know, mm-hmm. is that you ended up in a convent. And how did that happen?
Oh, okay. Like I shared earlier, you know, I went to college. I kind of got into the scene of the drinking and all that. I come back, after I graduated from college, I went to live with my parents. I got my, I always say, you know, I got a 4-year degree and I was a great pool shark. So I used it and I bartended as a social worker. So I bartended. And during that time, I was like of the world, and I wanted to be Julie McCoy from the Love Boat, Hospitality Plus, because that, like I said, by trade and by heart, that was me. But then in 1992, my mother was, or 91, my mother was diagnosed with cancer, bone cancer. And I happened to be at home with her. I was 23 years old, bartending with my dad, taking care of all the other siblings. They're on their whole life, left the house. And she died. She died in 5 months. So the doctor gave her 4 to 6 months. Now, at that time, I was clueless about death, dying. I was 23, need mom. And I did everything I could to keep her. And I kind of came back, you would say, to the church, bargaining with God during her illness. Mom brings out the rosary beads, I didn't know what they were, started praying, novenas, Padre Pio glove, like all this, the Catholic relics. Oh, mom will be healed. Mom will be healed. But she died. She died in the 5 months. And so I didn't know what to think. And I was really depleted, depressed, down. But yet at my mom's funeral, everyone would say, she's with God. I'm like, who the hell is this God person? You know, like, I'm like, no, she's not with me. I don't care. So I went back. I just went into the church one afternoon with nobody around, back on Long Island. That's where we buried my mom. I went into her church and I remember to this day, I said, you know, God, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to my mom. So you just move out of the way, because they say she's with you and I don't want to know who, you know. So in that, I mean, I could share so much in that. Slowly but surely, my cousins, the Italian side, you know, was very active in their youth groups, rosary clubs, this. So slowly I came back to the church. I Yes, I came back. I could share a story, it's just coming into my heart that during that time pilgrimage, you know, we Catholics go to pilgrimages, and I went to a place called Medjugorje, which is an allegedly, you know, it's not approved. I had been there 3 times, but the first time I was there, it was right like a year after my mom died. It was during the war back in 1993 in April, Holy Week. Talk about miracles. I went with this girl I did not know. Well, I know her now, but at that time I didn't. She says, I would like to do this pilgrimage, you know, and I'm like, I'll go with you. She says, I'm going to go to Italy in Medjugorje. I was like, I don't know what Medjugorje is, but my mother's Italian. Maybe she's there. I could find her. You know what I mean? Like that's, I wanted to get close to my mom. And so we did. I went on this pilgrimage during Holy Week. We didn't have any reservations, nothing. And but God provided. I tell you, there was miracles, people, angels guiding us, protecting us. We were in Rome on Easter Vigil night and not supposed to be there. And we had Mass with the Holy Father, John Paul, the next day. So a lot of these bonuses. And then when I went to Medjugorje, this is where I wanted to say is when I went to Medjugorje for a week, did not know what Medjugorje was about, went there unexpected. And here I had really experienced the Blessed Mother, like her presence. And I experienced heaven, what I think heaven is, like peace. So I was on this mountain there and I just looked up and I said, well, Mom, I said, if I think this is what heaven's like, I can't imagine where you're at. So, you know, so that was like a beginning of my journey. And then fast forward, I came back down that hill, came home, you know, wanted to be a sister. And then so I did. I joined a Franciscan sisters. It wasn't until like 4 years later, because a lot happened in between. But I actually joined in 1997 in the convent in New York City as a Franciscan sister. And I was a sister for 12 years. So.
Thank you for that story. I just think, I mean, I've heard of Medjugorje, of course. I've absolutely heard of it. I actually walked the Camino in 2013 from southern France to northern France. I never got to Santiago, but it's a whole other story in itself. And I am not Catholic. And at the time, I wasn't religious at all, but it was something that Creator asked me to do. And they were not subtle about that it needed to happen. So even though I didn't hike, I had a job, you know, I mean, it was the most ridiculous trip ever. I walked for about 3 months, 3.5 months, and it changed my life. I want to just go back and say that, first of all, love that you love Julie McCoy. Think that is the best thing ever, but also that you were a pool shark. And I just thought to myself, I want to watch that TV show, Julie McCoy as a pool shark. I think that would be the best show ever.
I'll be there.
Yeah. And I love the Love Boat too. I mean, all these old shows are so great and so fun. But I especially love Julie McCoy. She seemed to be the one that actually knew what was going on that ship. Everyone else was kind of having issues and trying to figure out why things were going so awry. And Julie was like, I know why, but nobody's asking me over here. So I love that you brought her in. She's such her character is just incredible. And I love that you bring up pilgrimage, because a lot of people, I mean, I do think, you know, it is almost this initiation rite. In any religion and any culture all over the world, you know, there are a lot of them that have initiation rites, specifically also as you're an adolescent going into adulthood. But the, like, for example, the Camino or going to Medjugorje, these are pilgrimages of the heart and of the soul and of communion with God and with that greater spirit. And I mean, I can honestly say that despite the fact that I was not Catholic, and despite the fact that I wasn't religious, I was asked to do the Camino. I showed up, I did it, and it changed my entire life, but I had to be brave. I had to go on faith. And sometimes these pilgrimages are harder than others. I think it's completely bonkers that you went and you didn't have any reservations or anything. But again, when we are called to do these trips, these journeys, things seem to kind of unfold and work in our favor. I don't know if you feel that way.
Definitely. Definitely. I do have to say, like, I kind of wish I had that kind of mentality today, like the unknown, because I was in the unknown. Okay, we'll do it. And God provided. And now here, having God or spiritual being in my life today, going into the unknown, it's like, okay, do you really have it? And then, but then yet I draw back on that trip. I draw back on many other trips I went on, pilgrimages that, yeah, God, the Spirit was there, was protecting me, was guiding me. And it all worked out. It all worked out. You know, might have gone through some pain and suffering, but that's okay. I'm alive today. And so, yes, I've learned a lot. I'm so grateful because I've been to other Marian apparition places and had a different flavor, a different taste, a different coming away, like, aha. I never did that walk, but I've done other pilgrim walks that killed me for the day. Because I had gone on many World Youth Days when I was a nun, and we would walk like 20 miles to see the Pope. I'm like, okay, is there a horse here or something? Like, I just want it. But I did it. And it's truly what you said. It's like when you do these pilgrimages, no matter what denomination or whatever spirit or whatever, it always brings something good. And it's sort of, we don't realize it, or I don't realize it at the time, but it's, you're dying to yourself. Like when you're on this pilgrimage, it's not like you had a gourmet food every day you were doing that cameo, you know, that walk. It's like you're dying and your body may be craving it. Like, no, can't have a steak today. Or, you know what I'm saying? So it, to me, it is any kind of spiritual walk, any spiritual, whatever somebody does, it's like taking yourself off on you and focusing on the light, God, Buddha, whoever it is that's giving you that peace, because our common denominator is peace. We want peace. We want peace and love. You know, we're like the hippies, but they're kind of true. We do want that peace and love, not on the outside, but on the inside. So
thank you for that. I'm going to make a confession here. I appreciate that you brought up denying yourself the steak or whatever that looks like. I was walking through France, and I have to admit that I maybe ate 3 chocolate croissants a day. But I said to myself, hey, I did actually ended up walking over 500 miles. I lost 20 pounds. I needed those calories. I needed like as much fat and sugar because I overpacked my pack as well. I brought like everything. So I had this really heavy backpack. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But next time I do a pilgrimage, I will maybe not have chocolate croissants and eat more vegetables. So thank you.
Real quick, I'll say another, like I could compare with that, is that when I was a nun, I had the opportunity to go to Rome for a month. It's a World Youth Day year 2000, Jubilee year. And I was struggling at the time before I was going, and I had 5 sisters under me, or 4. I don't remember, 4 or 5. But right before I went to confession, we Catholics go to confession, and I'm like, I don't know what to do in Rome. I'm the, you know, like this. And he said, my penance wasn't a Hail Mary, was that I had to eat a gelato every day there. And if you were with sisters, you had to buy them a gelato. That was my penance. This was, I love this priest. May he rest in, you know, may he rest in peace. But he was like, I was like, okay, that's my penance. So I had to do it. Stop. Okay, got to get a gelato. Here's a sister eating, you know, different stores because you don't want to look like a... So that just brought that up when you shared that. So
I love that. He was totally rocking and rolling. That's amazing. That's incredible. And I've never had the gelato in Italy, but I think it's close to heaven. That's what I've heard from other people, that it's ridiculously sublime. I wanted to ask you, just, you know, you have such an interesting last name. It's yes. Greek. And does it mean anything? Because sometimes I'm really intrigued by what names mean.
It means the city of money, economy, economo. It's, I guess I could tell another truth here, which is that it's my dad, Economopolis, and his, the way it came down, like maybe it was his uncle, he was a bishop in the Greek church. But he would collect the money. He would collect the money. So he'd go to the little villages and say, Father Economo's coming, Father Economo's coming. And then they added it on, Economopolis.
I love that. And I also ask this question because I love Italian food desperately, but I love Greek food even more. So what did it look like to eat in your house?
Mom being Italian, we had Italian, but she also made the pasticcio and the lamb and the orzo and all those and then as well as her lasagna. Everything was homemade. So we grew up around the table eating homemade Italian food as well as Greek. You know, with the Greeks, they would use lemon and oregano, as you may know, spices. So maybe a chicken with that kind of spice my mom would make with the potatoes. Yeah, we never starved, thank God. So we ate well.
Color me jealous, I have to tell you, because, you know, I always just consider it such a huge treat to go to a Greek restaurant, because I'm just like, I just already know it's going to be like beyond my wildest expectations. Greek food, Mediterranean food, I'm there for it. It's amazing. I can't even imagine just having a mother who makes it and it's just like there. I also think oregano is like a magical spice. And utterly delicious. Yeah. I'm house sitting a Siamese cat right now who is being a little stinky, aren't you? Yes, you are. Well, thank you for sharing that story about pilgrimage sites. But also, I think, you know, a lot of people, I mean, not a lot. I don't want to make a generalization here. But when I dated a Catholic man for 5 years in Portland, Oregon, and we would go to the archdiocese for services, and the archbishop would be there all the time. And he was from Chicago. And you want to talk about just a Chicago guy. I mean, he was a Cubs fan, hated the White Sox. I mean, he was so approachable and funny. And I think people tend to err thinking that, you know, the Catholic Church is very severe, that it's very, you know, no one has a sense of humor, that it's very serious, that, you know, people are kind of all like towing the same line and there's nobody's a singular different human being. But no, there is a lot of irreverence. Oh my goodness. There's a lot of irreverence. There is a lot of personality. There's a lot of humor in the Catholic Church. And I always say, you know, I've read Science magazine since I was a kid. My favorite, I mean, I'm a fan of Jesuits because I love learning. I love curiosity. I think it's a superpower, and I love knowledge and learning. And so there are many different, almost you could say, houses inside the Catholic Church of different kind of ways of being or different ways of being in the world, or whether it's interiorly or exteriorly. And that it's not, you know, it's not this giant monolith that like everybody's the same.
Oh, yes, that's true. That's true. And Jesuits, yes, they're more on the thinker, they're more on the meditative of the scriptures. They put themselves there, you know, Lectio Divina, whatever. And then there are, but you're right, because I mean, the Catholic Church is so big, like the world. And you're right. There are different pockets and different, I like how you said, just different little hubs in the church. And what we have to learn, even in the world, is to accept each other's hubs. We may not agree with it, and that's okay. You know, we may not agree. Some people like to laugh. in church. Some people may not. Doesn't mean that that person is bad. You know, it's like we have to, because everyone, I'm not judging here, but what I've learned from my experience, everyone has a different path in a different way, even in the Catholic Church. And whatever is going to make you happy, or whatever is going to, like I say, bring you that peace and that tranquility, that kindness and that love, kindness goes along far, whatever feeds you in that way, whether it's this little hub or maybe this little hub. I mean, because you have the charismatics, you've got the ones who are silent, you know, you have the people like, yay, Jesus. And you got the ones like, yay, Jesus, you know, which is beautiful. And you know, my prayer and my hope is that everyone could see how beautiful each person is in their own likeness, because we're all created in our own likeness of God, a supreme being, or somebody. So, I mean, we didn't create ourselves, so to speak, or I don't think, you know, that. And if somebody thinks that they created themselves, God bless them. You know, I would never, you know, say, I would never judge and because, as you know, I was a Catholic, being a nun, the convent I was in was very austere. We were very traditional. We slept on the floor. We didn't have nothing. I'm talking about nothing. We didn't have a rug. We didn't have a cushion that I'm sitting on right now. We didn't. Everything was plain. Everything was wooden. In our bedrooms would just be the crucifix and a Blessed Mother statue, and that's it. That's how we wore a full habit. Then you'll find some religious orders in the Catholic Church that may be more on the liberal side, you know, or they don't wear the habit, or and they may do this and they may do that, and they may live, they may have a nice cushioned bed. That's okay. But sometimes, you know, I've seen people like going on both sides, like, oh, you got to come on my side, you got to come on my side. No, you know. And I do have to say, I was like that as a sister at one point, you know, because I'm in this very traditional way. And thinking that it's my way or the highway, you know what I mean? And what I've learned after the fact, leaving this, is not that I really judge or hit anyone when I was a nun, when they say Catholic, you know, nuns hit people, but I didn't do that. But I learned a lot after the fact when I left the convent. I look back in hindsight. I see, you know, how my journey, because for me, as a sister, the reason why I'm not a sister is because I experienced a lot of pain and suffering from my own community. I would say I got kicked out. They wouldn't say that. So leaving, you know, the convent after 12 years, which the way I felt, it's like, did you ever feel when you were pushed against the wall and there's no more to go, and you're like, yeah. It's like, there's nothing more I could do. I did everything I could do in the last, like, mostly when things happened to me, or when things were addressed to me, it took like 2 years before finally they says that you don't belong here anymore, you know? And I'm like, what? You know, I gave my blood, sweat, and tears. I do have to say it left a bad taste in my mouth when I left, but I didn't go around to say anything. But now I look back in hindsight, it wasn't meant for me to be there. You know, that's who they were, acceptance. But now I've learned today that everyone has their own path, their own journey. No way is the right way. Whatever brings them into the light or into the hope, what they're searching for, because we're all searching for, whether it's through the Catholic Church, the Christian Church, the Rabbi Church, whatever, I mean, whatever, or not even a church, through the mountains, through the trees. I mean, everyone has their own, I think, so.
And I think it's also important to understand that even though, you know, like I brought up Jesuits before, which are an order of priests, or your convent, you know, which is another collection of human beings living together and having daily life together. All of these are, yes, they're religious orders, but they all are comprised of human beings. And human beings have their foibles, their shadows, the things I call them, their hungry ghosts, the things that feast on them that they are not kind of going to therapy for. We all need therapy. Putting it out there again. Everybody, we all need therapy. It's a collection of people who maybe haven't done their deepest work on their trauma, and they're living in community. And sometimes that community, even though it's a religious order, can get a little sticky and icky. You know, these aren't perfect communities. These are people who are living in the world and also trying to figure out what it all means, and especially for them and in this place and in this time. I'm sorry that you had that experience. I can't even begin to imagine how painful that must have been. I also cannot begin to imagine how painful it was to have others in your order not act with their best intentions toward you, or not act towards you with love and compassion and understanding. I don't know what happens to humans when they form their own little tribes. Sometimes I call them, like, you know, sometimes they're like packs of mean girls that roam around everywhere, and you can find them everywhere. They are everywhere. These packs of people who are maybe, you know, they're emboldened and they feel stronger when they're in a group, and they're maybe not the nicest people, but they're everywhere in the world. And every single one of us at probably many times in our lives are going to have to deal or engage with people who aren't the nicest people. So thank you for sharing that story. I can't even imagine just dedicating my life for 12 years and then being asked to leave. And I'm sorry that that happened to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But it was a miracle and a great gift that it all happened the way it did. So God brings good things out of the darkness. So,
yeah, so many people, I just talked about dark grace a couple weeks ago with another person on my podcast. And sometimes when we're going through struggles and really terrible things, and we're like, why me? Why me? Upon reflection later, after you've gone through it and emerged on the other side, you understand that the grace was there. It was just a different kind of grace. You're not supposed to be in this place. You're supposed to be in this other place. And unfortunately, the only way we can extricate you from it is making it maybe a little bit unbearable to stay where you are. But thank you for that nice segue, because, you know, the main question of the podcast is, and I'd love to hear more than one story from you. I'd love to hear multiple stories. I'd love to hear any stories of magic or any miraculous things that you feel like you've experienced, anything that's changed your life. It could be mysterious. And as I said before we even started this interview, I have heard everything under the sun. So joker's wild, you can tell whatever you'd like to share.
Miracles in my life. Small, little ones, big ones. When I was a nun, I saw other people have miracles, you know, praying, they get healed, they get like this, they get what they want. And I was so upset with God because I kept praying. I thought there was never a miracle for me, you know, during this hardship. But yet during this one time as a sister, I was gifted to go back to Medjugorje. This is my last entry. I'm a nun now. But when I went there, I was in such a dark place. I was paying some. This is when they didn't kick me at the time. I was a sister, but I was discerning. But needless to say, I happened to go on this trip, and I was just not a happy sister inside. I was not happy at all. And so in Medjugorje, It's like I said, it's a place where allegedly the Blessed Mother appears, a pilgrimage, another pilgrimage. But here I was in so much pain. And when we got there, I was with a group. Nobody knew anything was going on within me because I had smile sister, you know, sister. I was Sister Regina. Yeah. Hi, everyone. And this lady approached me, and she happened to be from Long Island, and she's with these she's with these kids. And I was like, oh, I'm from Long Island. So we talk. And she happened to be, and the two priests that were with her, one priest I knew, he had my confirmation. Like, he was a priest of my parish when I was a kid in Syosset. So I was like, oh my God, Father Tony, that's, you know, I was like, we're talking. And like I said, this place is, it is magical. It's spiritual, however you want to say it. It's just, you can't explain it. And so this one particular day, we went to see Father Yoza, which was a mystic priest out there. And I mean, mystic, that, what, you know, in heaven, you could, it's like, okay. So, and for me, I wanted anything to get blessings. I just needed blessings. So Father Joseph shared. And then afterwards, he started praying over people, and me as a nun squirming through the crowd, move out of the way, I'm a sister. He prays over me. Don't know what he said because it's Croatia. It's like, okay, grace is coming. I go, and then as I'm going to get to the bus, I see Father Tony. So right now I am like starving for prayer, starving for grace, anything, starving for light. So I asked Father Tony to pray over me. He didn't know anything. He started what one would say, like prophesize. I don't, you know, he prayed. He says, I ask God to give you the light in the darkness that you're experiencing. And he was like, he was saying all these things that I'm in tears. And I'm like, oh my God, he's reading my soul. As soon as he's done, I looked at him. I said, Father Tony, how did you know? He goes, I don't know, but it looks like something is pushing you out. It's like, and I didn't explain anything to him or what was going on. I said, that's like, so then we get back to the Medjugorje into the town because we were in another town. And like I shared with you, this lady friend who's with Father Tony and Father Charles, they knew one of the visionaries from Medjugorje. So she invited me to go and pray the rosary in the chapel where this visionary was going to be. And I got to back up because the night before she invited me and I did go and I felt peace. The Blessed Mother comes down allegedly and talks. And I felt this peace. I was, you know, and I'm just like pouring my heart out to anything. So, but the next day she says, oh, Yvonne wants you to come back. Okay, I'll come back. And, but before that, I was at Father Yozo. I saw Father Tony. I get there and I'm there. And at this time of this prayer time, it was all priests. It was like, and I was like the only sister and my friend, she came in a little later. And so she sat next to me and I couldn't sit up front. And so we're praying. And then at 6:40, it's like, shh, the Blessed Mother is here. You know, because Yvonne's up there, but like, okay. And I'm like, and I'm, you know, and everyone wants to look, everyone wants to see the Blessed Mother. And so anyhow, I was such pain and something inside me says, look at the cross. There was a beautiful cross behind the altar where he was standing. And so I looked at the cross. There was a big light on the cross. And I was like, oh, somebody. He opened the door because of the sun. It was bright sunny, you know, when the sun comes and shines because the light disappeared. And after I saw the light, the Blessed Mother left. So we sit down and my friend, you know, they interpret what the Blessed Mother said to Yvonne. And there's my friend, you know, writing it down. And at the end of what he said, he was telling everyone, the Blessed Mother says, As she was leaving, she lit up the cross. She was lighting up the cross. I was like, Rose, did you see that? And they're like, she's like, no, I didn't see that. And I had to look on her paper to see what it was that she actually, what I heard. And it was exactly what she said. And I was like, I saw it. Nobody saw that. That's going back in 2004. So almost 20 years, it was 20 years in August that this phenomenon, this whatever grace, light grace, I didn't know what it meant at the time. All, you know, I kept thinking, oh my God, I'm going to suffer for the rest of my life. I'm like, you're lighting up the cross for me. Yeah. I mean, that's in our Christian faith, the cross of suffering. Yeah. But other than that, there was that light. It was the resurrection afterwards, but it took me a while to really come to real that. And I know the reason why I share this, it, to me, it's a miracle because how God speaks through people, places, situations, and things. And another thing I came away with is that God is with me. You know, he's with me, that he's with me in my pain. He was with me in my suffering, even though I didn't, that he was with me. It was sort of like, aha. So when I came back to the States after that, okay, whatever comes next, I'll do. And which meant I was sent away. I was sent away. I was sent away before I actually left. But it gave me that strength to continue. Because if I believe if I didn't have that strength and everything that was happening to me, because they I was isolated, whatever, I would have left the community and just put myself somewhere in a psychiatric ward. That's how bad. But I said, no, I got to stick through this. I got to stick through this. I don't know why this has happened to me. I don't know why they're doing it to me. So that pivot moment gave me the strength to continue to get the help I need, which I did, and more help. And then finally, you know, I left, even though even though I felt like I was kicked out, even though there was a lot of pain. But I look back now, best day of my life. The best day. No regret. Best day. Best day. So glad. Thank you, Lord.
I have to tell you that I was getting goosebumps when you were telling me this story. And, you know, I don't think a lot of my listeners would know, but there are people who have a specific veneration or attachment to Mother Mary, Lady Mary. In the desert Southwest, Our Lady of Guadalupe. She has many different names all over the U.S. and indeed, you know, the whole world. But she is Mother Mary. You know, I think that's the most common name probably that you'll hear her described as. And there are a lot of incredibly gorgeous phenomena that attend her when she shows up. One of the things that is actually really fascinating is a lot of times when she's present, there's a really distinct smell of roses. So she's affiliated with the smell of the rose. And people have talked about being in churches or different difficult times in their lives. And all of a sudden, you know, the smell of roses will encompass them and they'll immediately know that Mother Mary is with them and that they're not alone. And she's absolutely this icon of just blessings and gifts and benediction, but also I think witness, because, you know, this world is very lonely. It can be very isolating. It can be very depressing, sad, challenging, you name it, all those adjectives. It can be all of those. And having a relationship with Mother Mary can quite literally change your life, because I do think that she shows up when we need her. I'll share a story with you. In Portland, Oregon, there is this incredible, it's so hard to explain. They basically carved out these cliffs that are in North Portland. And there is a big, it's the most gorgeous outdoor space. It is so beautiful. And there's an outdoor chapel with a beautiful like carving in the side of this cliff. And then literally just down the way, there's a chapel for Mary carved out of the cliff. And then you can take an elevator to the top of the cliff. And there is a massive, massive outdoor space with, you know, you can walk the signs of the cross. There's a labyrinth there. There's a big convent up there where there are sisters up there. I mean, I say this cliff, it is just really hard to explain. You actually have to go visit because it's not real. This place doesn't, it's like otherworldly, I swear. So I was there one day and I was having a really difficult time in my life, but the Mother Mary Chapel is just, the church is just so beautiful and it's so contemplative. And you really get a sense of being connected to the earth and the sky because it's carved out of stone. I mean, it's just very beautiful, beautiful space. And I would come in, commence praying and then crying, commence praying and then crying every time, commence praying and crying. But I found a lot of it was good for me to be just in that general space because of how green it was and the trees and the wildness and the stone. And, you know, it's a space that holds a lot of really potent sacred energy just because of all the pilgrims and all the worshipers that come there. So I'm not Catholic, but I was getting a lot of just peace in my heart from going there. And so I go yet again, I go to Mary's Chapel, I'm crying and feeling sorry for myself and whining, and, you know, but feeling a real connection with her, but still whining. And all of a sudden I heard this voice came in my ear and said, for every time there was a season, and then it disappeared. And I sat up and I looked around at everybody and I was like, did anybody else hear that? Okay, because I also am not a big studier of the Bible, but I thought to myself, I think that's from the Bible. And it just shook me to the core. And I thought, what just happened here? I understood later that, I mean, it was a woman's voice, and she wanted to let me know that she was witnessing me, that she was seeing what I was going through, that she was present and strong enough to be there for me and hold me in my time of sadness and sorrow, but that she wanted me to know that I am not alone and that I will never be alone.
That's it.
And I needed that. I was like, I don't even know what this means. I got a little grumpy. I was like, I don't even know what this means. Why would you, what is it? And so, you know, and then later, of course, I understood what it meant, but I needed that message that day. And I think she shows up when we need her the most in our darkest times to remind us that she has our backs, that she's with us.
I totally agree. I love that story. I identify with my own story with a Blessed Mother. I took her name, Regina, that means queen. But yes, Mother Mary, she really, I always put myself and everyone under her mantle of love. Like I place ourselves, you know, when I say, if I'm going to go somewhere, if I need some protection, you know, she may pop in and say, I just need to place me onto your mantle and, you know, cover, be my mother. Like I said, when I lost my mom at that young age, Mary became my mother. So I felt like I had two mothers in heaven. And so we developed this mother-daughter relationship with our Blessed Mother, with Mother Mary, and just being at Medjugorje. I was at Guadalupe, Fatima, Lourdes. I felt like it was a calling, a grace. Of course, I was a sister, so, you know, it was a lot easier because we didn't have money, so people paid my way. So I was like, okay, you know, I'll do it. Pray the rosary, guide, share. Yeah, and I do. I do believe, because in each spot, there was always something or some, and like you said, you know, it's so real is when you can't explain it. When you can't explain it to someone, that means that, you know, it's so real to real. It's just real.
Absolutely.
So it's like,
I do also, now I could be wrong and you can correct me on this, but I do think that there are more sacred spaces all over this planet where Mother Mary has shown up and healed people or shown up as a vision than any other saint or religious figure. I mean, she shows up everywhere.
Yeah.
And like performs these, and by the way, not just like one or two people see her, like Fatima is an extraordinary example of like, I think hundreds of people seeing a vision.
Seen her. Miracle of the Sun.
Yes.
That came from Fatima. Yeah. Our Lady of Lourdes, St. Bernadette, eating the weeds. I mean, these are stories that how the Blessed Mother manifests. And meanwhile, those that she appeared to or those who saw, nobody would either believe or you didn't believe. And they would think you're crazy until it manifested. Like, look at the water, the wells of water, the healing at Lourdes. I mean, and I do, I'm a believer. I believe in anything like Mother Mary. Like, yeah, I believe it. Bring me to, you know, I've been to Lord's. Yeah. I took a bath, talking about morning graces. I was taking a bath twice a day, you know, like, come on, I just need it. I just, you know, that's how Sometimes I feel like I was a little child back then. Like, I want more. I want more grace. I don't see it. I don't know it. But somebody tells me, you know, it's good. Okay. But I've learned a lot, you know, as I got older. But it's that childlike thinking. Like, yes. You know, like you said, the blessed mother. She is. Like, somebody told me she's appearing somewhere down the street. And who am I to say she's not? You know, who am I to say? If it brings fruits of peace and love and, like you said, comfort, a voice, a mother's voice. And if you can't explain it, then it's real. She's there.
Yes, I love all this. I want everybody to know about it. I'm like, let's talk about it all the time. I want to just address, I have to let you know that I also want to put this out there that you are a miracle because you are so resilient. And your story is really profound. I mean, you shared the story about the convent, but you've had multiple surgeries from when you were a kid, you know, and then you left the convent and horrible relationships, alcoholism. And yet here you are. You're this beacon, bright, shining ray of light with this generous spirit, expansive spirit, you know, modeling for others how it is to be in the world, overcoming adversity and being so resilient. And do you think this is just something you had since you were a child?
Looking back, yes. I do believe that there was something special upon me. Or my mother always thought I was special. Because like you said, I was born with a hip. I was born with you know, I had many surgeries, body casts as a child. I broke my leg. Like, I was a person that that always things happened to me, poor me, you know, poor me. And I was physically limited, accident prone, you name it. And I had seven siblings that were athletes, you know, nothing happened. So my mother would say, oh, you're so special because of all these things. And that's just something that kind of drilled in me. And you know, people ask me, you can't explain it, really. All I know is that I just kept going. I kept pushing forward. I kept doing it because there was something in me that wanted that peace. Because even as a child, I was loved by my parents, but there was no peace inside Gina. I mean, I don't know. Like, I didn't have the confidence. I was insecure. And I thought everybody was insecure. But, you know, when you look at this peer and this one, I was about peer pressure. I wanted to please everyone. And that's why maybe I even joined the convent to please everyone, because I would say I had a soul sickness inside me. And so when I left the convent, I got involved with Danny. He was an alcoholic. He has a tragic story because he died of this disease. So that was another, okay, God, you know, here I am, 48 years old. Am I going to have any kind of light in my life? So there was a point after his death, I'm very familiar with grief. Grief is my best friend. I don't need to go to school for grief. I know. I mean, I could teach. I could do everything about grief because I know so much about grief. And it was just sort of like, yeah, that's me, grief. But with Danny, once again, when he died, I was depleted. At this point, I wanted to die. I wanted to kill myself. I wanted to hit the tree. I would go to bed every night and say, God, please, I don't want to wake up this morning. And I would wake up and I said, oh, crap, I'm up. What do I do? What is the meaning of life? And then on my journey, I just kept going forward. I kept pushing. I kept seeking. I don't know how, when, or where, but I got to a point where it was nothing for me, nothing. And I happened to walk into an AA meeting after Danny died because he was the alcoholic. And I was like saying, you know, why he's dead and you're sober. And I just, I don't know what took place, but I was there for a year every day just to be there crying. When you know how you said you went to that space of mother and you just cry. I think crying is the best thing. Of pushing forward because it's tears of healing without you knowing it, sharing, like griping. Yes, I'm angry. And so I was doing all this. And then then I come to realize I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I just was like, oh my gosh, that's my problem. in my whole life. I mean, a few of my relatives said you needed the program 25 years ago. And maybe if I did, I wouldn't go through all that grief. And I mean, I was an alcoholic in the convent, didn't realize it. It is, the disease. It's not only the drinking, but it's the disease, the manipulation, the fear-based, the anger, the resentment, you name it, the holding on. And that's why I was holding on. And then when I realized I was an alcoholic, once I said, my name is Gina, I'm an alcoholic, didn't happen overnight, but it's like a whole Band-Aid ripped off of me and all my pain, hurt, just opened up. And I was like, oh my God, it was more pain than I've carried my whole life because I carried the pain with me. I didn't have an outlet. Like you said about counseling. Yeah, go to counseling because I even did counseling, you know. But for my solution, it was that I realized my problem was with alcohol. My problem was with Gina. And so being in the program for 9 years, I have 9 years of sobriety. That's one day at a time that I was able to work a program where it brought me back into my spiritual being, into my spiritual cell. And in that, now I'm spiritually filled, like my soul is filled. And that's where it's an inside job. And that's where today I could share and spread my message of hope and strength, like with you, with others, whoever encounters. By nature, I always had a heart of service. So now it's like, okay, who I am. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a woman of God now. But I'm truly is a child. I'm a person with that peace and serenity 80%, 85%, 90% of time. You know, I mean, we have those, we need to get our space moments. And that's where I see miracles. For me to be here today, not to be 6 feet under. Oh, boy, it's a miracle because there's many times that I should have been dead, whether it was drinking or just even in my own life, you know. And so I always say, you know, waking up, there's three things I say every morning that I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I'm alive because some people don't wake up alive. I'm grateful that I am sober because for me, I'm an alcoholic that I'm sober, and grateful I have a God in my life. And in that, everything is a bonus. Everything is a bonus. And I do see miracles in my life, miracles in others' life, just waking up and seeing the sun shining and little tidbits of things and aha, you know, when I have a aha moment, like, yeah, God, that's what you're telling me, or my spiritual being, you know, it's like, so yes. So, and it's a miracle that I'm back with a spiritual being because prior to that, you know, when Danny died, I hated God with a passion. Ooh, now just through a lot of searching, questioning, crying. I did a lot of crying. Crying is my best friend. Tears are the best healing. So
it's true. I have said that I wish more people would cry a lot more because I think, you know, they would move along on their healing journey faster. Although crying is not really fun, and just having to sit with those emotions and feelings is really challenging and difficult and can break your heart. But on the other side, if you have the fortitude and the resilience and the strength to walk through that valley of the shadow of death, on the other side is a whole new life and a whole new relationship with not only the world, but yourself. And that's worth more than anything in the world.
Yes. And just the one thing, when you're talking about feelings, yes, it's emotional feelings. But what I've learned now being, you know, in a sober mind or just in a right space is that I realize I still have these feelings. I could still have feelings of anger and everything. But I realize feelings aren't facts. That's not who I am. That's not, and I have tools now where I could, you know, bring it here. I live by the beach. Okay, I'm going to throw in the ocean, you know, and not that they're going to go away, but I know that there's something being that the power, their power, you know, the power is going to help it, you know, but it's okay to feel. And that's where I've always shared with people like, oh, I can't feel this. No, it's okay. It's okay. Because you're human. We're human. It's okay. All any feelings you have, whatever. So there's so much I could share, but.
And I think, you know, one of the things that is kind of an injustice in our world and what's happened is that it's this world, you know, not everybody, but it's kind of made feeling your feelings a bad thing, you know, like lock mm-hmm. them up, throw away the key, act strong. Be brave, you know, don't go back, revisit the past. Don't, you know, revisit those things that cause you pain. And at least for me, reconciling those experiences, those feelings, that is what has been changed. That's what's changed my life.
Yeah. No, I totally agree, because we can't change the past. Like when you had said in the beginning, or there was a part you said you're Italian and Greek. And I tell everyone I'm Italian and Greek. I said, best combination. I can't change it. So I'm going to have to like it. You know, I mean, and I need to take that model with, even in my past. Yes, I think I'm mostly healed, reconciled, like, you know, because I'm at peace, because I could look at it. You know, we also, there's a saying is that, you know, you can look at your past, but don't stare at it, you know, like, because staring takes longer. And, but then yet some people may need to stare just to get, like you said, to be reconciled, to look at those feelings, you know, and then realize those feelings aren't who I am today. You know, that resentment, that anger, realizing that it's not doing me any good. You know, it's like, and I believe it's that grace time moment where you're like, enough is enough. I don't want to be sick, and you move on. And then there's other feelings come. Okay, I don't want that either. But fear, I mean, fear is just common in all of us, and nobody likes fear. It's either you face it and you know, you face it and recover, or you run away with it, you know? And I've just learned, you know, the hard way, pain way. And I can't, you know, when I share my message, it's not like I can't stop anybody's pain or recovery or whatever their journey is. I can't. I could encourage them. I could say, don't give up. And they have a whole different journey. But like I shared, like I keep saying, is that we all have that peace within us that we're searching for. And keep searching. And there may be a person, a place, or something like, okay, I like this. Stay there. Be filled with that. Okay, move over. Because, you know, God, the universe has a story for each one of us. Each day it unfolds. And it's like, what are we going to do? Yeah. And it's just, I mean, there are days sometimes today, it's like, no, I don't want to, you know, I don't like this, God. You know, things happen. But, and I also believe, you know, not only feeling is to be true to yourself, to be true and real to yourself, to say, you know, I don't like this. I really don't like what's going on, to and share it with whoever. And that's okay to say you don't like it. You don't have to love everything. Eventually, we got to all have to accept things in life. You know, that's that they say the acceptance is the answer, because if you accept what goes on, then there's that peace, you know, but it's a road that's in grief and everything. So
I do have to say that you've left me with one kind of irrevocable memory. And I just thought, Julie McCoy is a pool shark moving through the world. That's the kind of person I want to be out in the world. She's on the love boat. She gets to plan the events, create fun for other people, create spaces where everyone is invited and they can all belong and have a good time. But at the same time, she's also a pool shark. So you got to watch out for her. So I kind of want to model that in the world now.
It sounds good to me.
Everybody, I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. And honestly, I have to say, there was so much in this conversation. I mean, you could go with the theme of from darkness to light, you know, where Gina goes through all of these struggles, all of these trials and tribulations, and now where she is today, understands that they were all necessary and all helping her find her true path. Also, the theme of the power of faith. You know, after her personal trauma as a former nun and her struggles with alcoholism, I mean, she still talks about the faith that she still has.
Even though her life has been challenging, she still has faith. And sometimes I think these dark nights of the soul, they help us discover just who we really are. And then, of course, healing through service and the role of the deep compassion and empathy that Gina has in overcoming grief as her work as an end-of-life doula. Gina is just a magical human being, and I would so love for you to take the time, make the effort to click on the link in the show notes to discover a little bit more about this really fun and spicy human being. I'm so grateful to Gina for taking the time and saying yes to being on the podcast, because not everyone says yes and not everyone becomes a new friend. I really feel like Gina has, but really do a deeper dive on just who she is. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Gina. Be resilient. Gina has been through so much and from such a young age. Yet she always had that kind of positive attitude and that idea that life means something, that magic and miracles are real and potent out in the world. And those beliefs in magic and miracles, they kind of carried her along and lifted her up when she needed it. So be like Gina and be stalwart and brave in the face of adversity and keep your sense of humor. Because as you know, and as I've said so many times, humor is a superpower. So keep your sense of humor amid the darkness. And I think that with patience and with fortitude and bravery, so very soon, you're going to see a light at the end of your tunnel. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you so very soon next week for another episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast. So until then, you know what I'm going to say. Make friends with strangers, believe in the magic in life, and dance like no one is watching.